In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Oregon's state motto is Alles Volat Proprius, Latin for she flies with her own wings. But that doesn't mean she knows where she's going. Some people see that motto as Oregon just sort of does its own thing when the rest of the country is doing something else. You know, like being normal and sensible. Because all too often, especially when it comes to voting, Oregon is its own worst enemy. Back in November 2010, on the national level, Republicans retook control of the House in the rebellion against Obama and in particular against Obamacare. They also picked up several seats in the Senate. This seems like ancient history now, but Ted Kennedy passed away, and in a special election in January 2010, Scott Brown won the Senate seat that had been previously occupied by Democrats since 1953. At the time, Obamacare, recently passed by the Democrat-controlled House and the Democrat supermajority in the Senate, was languishing in reconciliation. By taking that seat, it broke the Democrat supermajority of 60 seats in the Senate, and that's when Nancy Pelosi deemed it passed and Obamacare became law. That underhanded move led to the Republicans retaking control of the House in the 2010 general election. Oregon experienced a little of that 2010 red wave. They didn't retake control of the House, but they did manage to get a tie 30-30. Fast forward to 2024 when President Trump not only won the Electoral College, but also the popular vote, giving him a mandate to go in and create some major reforms in government. All across the nation, county after county shifted in Trump's favor compared to 2020. And not just counties, but in nearly every demographic group. As I said last week, if there's one thing that voters need to learn to do, it's to vote down ballot. All across the United States, if people had voted for Republican congressmen and Republican senators, Trump would not have the narrow margins that he has in the House and Senate. That means the change they voted for is going to be that much harder to do. On the Democrat side, people simply did not turn out for Kamala. She got some 10 million fewer votes nationwide, and even here in Oregon, she got over 120,000 fewer votes than Joe Biden did. In a year when Oregon should have capitalized on Trump and rode on his coattails, Oregon did not get a red wave. In fact, we went backwards. Although, at least in Oregon, people who voted for Trump appeared to do a fairly good job of voting down ballot. In fact, on that, Republicans did much better than the Democrats did. Trump got 908,000 votes. Republican candidates for Congress got 902,000 votes, only about 6,000 fewer. Republican U.S. congressional candidates captured 99.3% of the Republican presidential vote. Compare that to the Democrat candidates. Kamala got 1,220,000 votes, whereas Democrat congressional candidates got 1,133,000 votes, or about 87,000 fewer. That's only 93% of the Democrat presidential vote. But the problem is, Democrats simply outnumber Republicans here in Oregon, and not by a little, but by a huge amount. There are 1,021,000 Democrats, but there are only 745,000 Republicans. That's a difference of some 275,000. On a percentage basis, Democrats make up 33% of voters in Oregon. Republicans are 24%, with non-affiliated voters at 36%, and all of the other combined third parties making up 7%. To overcome that, you either need an exceptionally low turnout among Democrats, or you need an exceptionally high turnout among Republicans and non-affiliated voters who will vote for the Republican candidate. When I first started becoming active in politics here in Oregon, that would have been in 2009, there were two national grassroots organizations working with the grassroots here in Oregon, FreedomWorks and Americans for Prosperity. I forget exactly when, I think it was around 2014, FreedomWorks pulled out of Oregon. They said Oregon was a lost cause. And although they kept some paid staff in Oregon for a while, Americans for Prosperity pulled out soon thereafter, and for the same reasons. Oregon was a lost cause. Is it? Well, if nothing changes, it will be. Oregon's political leaders on the Republican side have been in denial for well over 10 years now. They keep talking about change. It's almost like those running the party don't want to win. Psychologically, it's easy to keep losing. Winning takes hard work. Winning takes changing what you're doing wrong. Winning takes hard assessments, facing the brutal truth. My personal experience with and perception of the Oregon Republican Party is it's more important to be in charge than to do something, than to make the changes necessary to win. That's a brutal fact. They have created the mindset that perpetual failure is acceptable, and that's why it's hard to draw support from outside the state, and outside help is exactly what's needed. We need help from outside. We need outside funding. We need people who know how to win because they've done it. We need to stop taking advice from people who continue to lose. We also need people here in Oregon who will get out of the way. We appreciate what you've done, but to take things to the next level, we have to do something differently. In the spring of last year, just a few months after the 2022 election that did not see the projected red wave materialize, I gave a speech to the Capital City Republican Women's Group. It was an assessment of what Oregon Republicans needed to do to win. The first thing was face the brutal truth, the brutal facts of what had led to our defeats here in Oregon. Whether in business or in life or in politics, you cannot develop a winning strategy or start winning until you face the brutal facts of where you went wrong and what needs to happen to win. Brutal because they are hard to look at and, more so, hard to admit. But until you correct what's wrong, you cannot start doing what's right. But facing the brutal facts leads to the brutal truth, which can lead to a strategy that is brutal for your opponents. Things have to change. Doing nothing is the only choice that has a guaranteed result. I shared some keys in that speech to win in 2024. Among them, the importance of communication. The states where Trump won, he was relentlessly communicating and finding other venues to do so, bypassing traditional media in favor of alternative media like podcasts. I also mentioned the importance of starving your enemies. For too long, Republican consultants are more than happy to place expensive ads on TV and social media. When you're paying for ads on traditional media, you are literally paying to keep Trump-hating so-called news programs on the air. Mark Zuckerberg, who censors conservatives at will, does not need more money from Republicans. I also mentioned the importance of challenging cheating in elections. The states where Trump won, the RNC had an army of attorneys, and they sued to change voting rules that had been in place in 2020. They worked with legislators to change the laws. Republican governors and the legislators stepped up to clean up voter rolls and remove people who shouldn't be there. And I said that in looking at the results of the 2022 election, when Republicans should have won many more House seats than they did, we had not learned the brutal facts from 2020, things like ballot harvesting. The question wasn't, why didn't we stop them? Rather, it should have been, why didn't we think of that? And why didn't we do that? We were outmaneuvered. But in 2024, we did beat them at their own game. Republicans in the states where Trump won had a tremendous ground game. In case you hadn't noticed, Oregon did none of those. My hope is that we face the brutal facts, learn from winners, and come up with a brutal strategy and put in the hard work to finally save Oregon from itself in 2026 and 2028. And that Oregon Republicans' motto becomes, losing is no longer an option. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Representative Ed Diehl to look at what happened here in Oregon and to look at the reality we now have in front of us. I would like to welcome Representative Ed Diehl from House District 17, which takes up most of Marion County east of Salem and a bit of Linn County as well. Ed, it is great to talk to you.
Great to be back with you, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm glad to have you on. Glad to see that you won your reelection. And that's really the theme of today's show is dissecting what exactly happened here, not just in Oregon, but I'd like to actually start with a broader view here in terms of what happened on the national level. I mean, Republicans did pretty well. They won the White House. They won the House and the Senate. Any thoughts on what we saw nationally?
Well, I was pretty elated with what happened nationally. Yeah, it really was a red wave. And, you know, we were hoping that it would not be close and contested, and it wasn't. It was overwhelming, and we overwhelmed them with votes. So it was really indisputable.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased to see the results.
Too big to rig, for sure. And, yeah. You know, I said in my opener that Trump won the seven swing states, among other things, because the RNC, the National Republicans, and Republicans in general decided to fight this time. They had really played dead last time, waiting until after the election to file lawsuits. And this time, the RNC filed lawsuits and challenges to fight for election integrity. They challenged votes that were coming in. There was a case I thought anyway, that didn't get nearly enough attention. It was Matthew DiPerno had discovered that some 165,000 ballots had been fraudulently cast in Michigan. Well, that's more than enough to have stolen Michigan had those been allowed to continue. And they also had a huge army of volunteers, poll watchers and observers, and the Republicans worked with outside groups to create a tremendously improved ground game, including registration drives and get out the vote, ensuring people not only registered to vote, but actually voted. Your thoughts on that end of the win?
What I saw is actually a lot of things I think Oregon needs to learn from. I mean, they did a massive get out the vote campaign, and they were registering new voters and converting NAVs and independents to Republican. So it was really about what I've gathered. It's really about increasing the voter base, not trying to convert longtime voters who might be on the fence or in the middle. It was going after people who were not voting, low propensity voters, and getting them to vote maybe for the first time or voting in a long time. So I was ecstatic to see that. And I am actively looking to learn more about why that is and what worked
yes.
for them.
Yeah. Well, I saw somebody on Twitter.
Yeah.
They're in a private group that I belong to, and they were already reaching out within days after the election. They were already reaching out to Scott Pressler and his organization to come to Washington, and you know, because Oregon didn't exactly shift to the right very much. In fact, I lost a little bit of ground there that we'll certainly deal with in the next few segments here. But they meaning Washington, went even further left than we did. And they were already saying, hey, Scott, we need your help here because we're not going to survive otherwise. I guess the question is, why didn't Oregon do some of that?
We've reached out to Scott as well.
Good.
Just FYI. You know, this is really, Mark, this is my first election cycle where I've really done a deep dive to see how things are done. And I think what happened is what the other states, you know, some of these swing states like Pennsylvania, they just threw away the playbook. They threw away the playbook and they went with a different approach. While Oregon and I bet Washington were sticking with the same the same playbook.
Yeah.
We were using pollsters who turned out to be wrong. We weren't being creative with getting out the vote and going after low propensity voters. You know, we spent a lot of money on TV ads that I don't know if they moved the needle at all.
Hmm. Well, I know that in talking to some station managers that our show airs on, the ones that I had talked to said they did not get any political ads from Republican candidates. And talk radio,
really?
That's their friend.
Okay.
Yeah. Certainly not in the – well, there were some local races, like, for example, Kevin Mannix was advertising on the Salem station there. But as far as the national level, because – I honestly thought going into the election that we had a legitimate shot to not only keep CD5, but pick up CD6 and maybe even pick up CD4. And we missed badly on the other two, and now it looks like we've lost CD5. And I know that a lot of those stations had reached out to those candidates, and they just wouldn't even return phone calls.
You know, I don't have a good answer for what they were doing with the national or with those congressional elections. I know that when it came to digital media, I mean, if you were streaming your football games or TV, they were every 3 minutes, I swear. Mm-hmm. But you know, I heard the same thing from one of the another radio guy that there were hardly any ads he was getting asked to do.
And
now in the Salem market, I know that Kramer and Mannix, they were running radio ads.
Yes.
I heard them. In fact, I helped pay for some of them. So,
well, it's unfortunate because the consultants, I do know the consultants get paid more money for TV and digital ads. They don't get paid so much for the radio ads. And that may be, I hate to say it, but that may be one of the motivations is the consultants just don't make as much money. And it's really unfortunate because they've got this misperception that radio doesn't reach as many people. But the Nielsen people that rate all of media, not just radio and TV, but digital as well, radio is by far the number one most listened to media. And yet, for some reason, the political consultants just ignore it. You know, before we switch to Oregon, real quick, I have to ask you this. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we are on the brink of World War III. Sunday, Biden allowed Ukraine to fire long-range missiles into Russia. Tuesday, Ukraine did just that. And now on Thursday, Russia responded by firing an ICBM into the middle of Ukraine. Putin has said that it was their brand-new hypersonic ballistic missile with a non-nuclear payload. But even more worrisome, he said that it's within Russia's right to now strike any military facilities in NATO countries because of Biden's escalation. I mean, all of this reminds me of that quote misattributed to Sun Tzu, an evil man will burn down his own nation to rule over the ashes. I mean, Biden and the Democrats just lit the match here.
I don't know what to say about it. It's like they are trying to get a big fight going right before Trump gets in, mm-hmm. so he can just has no other option but to continue it.
Yeah,
it's really concerning. So it does make you wonder, what do they have something they need to hide?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we know they started the first impeachment because he was close to uncovering what was happening there in Ukraine. So it would not surprise me one bit if they're trying to do this to cover up mm-hmm. something else. So, all right, let's go and take a break. When we come back, we're going to assess what happened in Oregon. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking to Ed Deal today. He's a representative from House District 17. That's over in mainly in the eastern side of Marion and Linn County. And Ed, I'd like to talk to you a little bit now about what's going on here, what happened here in Oregon with the election. Still a race out there that's been undecided. I know that there's some others that are very far down ballot that haven't been quite called yet on some of these things. But starting at the top there, Trump lost Oregon. No real surprise there. However, I should point out that in 2019, Democrats passed the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. It does not have enough states yet, but if it did, all of Oregon's electoral votes would have gone to Trump since he won the popular vote. I mean, wouldn't that have been funny? I mean, Trump's win was so big that even Antifa didn't riot in Portland, but they sure would have if Oregon's electoral votes had been given to Trump thanks to the Democrats.
No kidding. I think just in good spirit and just to show good faith toward their movement,
sure,
they should give all the electoral college votes to Trump.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome.
I mean, yeah, I think it's pretty ironic that's happened.
Yeah. Well, here on the, we already talked about the CD5 that I don't think that's been officially called yet. Looking here at my producer, she's shaking her head. No, it hasn't been officially called yet. It's looking like Lori Chavez will miss that. I think last time I looked, she was down about 8,000 votes or so. CD6, I think, was a real miss. We should have won that one. CD4.
Yeah.
Again, so much of that is a red district, except for that part that touches Eugene. And again, that's redistricting. Unfortunately, we were not able to get those redistricting changed in such a way that the districts made sense.
No, they really took advantage of the redistricting and they carved them accordingly. You know, Lori was hanging on to that seat, even though it's a D-plus district. And I haven't done the forensics to look at what happened. But on the House seats here too, Oregon Republicans have been holding on to four seats that are D-plus districts.
Hmm.
The Democrats don't have any R-plus districts. So we were, it's just the way they've carved things.
Yes.
We're really at a disadvantage.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. And speaking of the House, it's looking like we've lost a seat there. And if that's the case, well, it's Tracy Kramer's seat, and she hasn't officially lost it yet. She's very narrow. She's down, I think you said during the break there, less than 200 votes there. But we did lose a Senate seat, in which case they now have regained the supermajority in the Senate. They're Tracy Kramer's seat away from gaining a supermajority in the House. So I know that you've been doing a deep dive there into Tracy's seat. So what's going on there?
Yeah. So, on election night, Tracy was up by 500 to 600 votes. And people were celebrating victory. But then over the course of the remaining days, as they continued to count ballots, that lead dwindled and got smaller and smaller until the last time I checked, she was down by 123 votes. Mm. And I'm sure that number's been updated today, and I have not seen it. So a huge swing. And so the status right now is we have a team that is out there curing ballots. And what that means is there's a number of ballots that were received that could not be opened because the signature was invalid or there was a no signature, yet it was received in time. And so those ballots, we get a what's called a cure list, and the Democrats get one and the Republicans get one, and then we go out door knocking and phone calling to get our folks to fix those ballots, correct their signature to make sure that those ballots are counted. But
do you have an idea of how many your how many Republican ballots need cured, and if they are, they would then count, versus how many are on the Democrat side?
Yeah. The number of D ballots is double what the number of Republican ballots are to cure.
So that's not looking
and
good.
And the vast majority, the vast majority are NABs, which is very interesting because it's a huge number of NABs that it's disproportionate. So for some reason, they're the ones that were having trouble filling their signature out correctly. But I can tell you it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good.
That's definitely discouraging. I've heard things like there was something wonky going on there, and this I'm only hearing this second or third hand, is that during the counting process, election observers were being pushed out and being blocked from observing. Did you hear anything about that sort of thing happening in that race?
In Marion County?
Yeah.
So, I have been in there the last 3 days. So what I can tell you is I do have a lot of confidence in what is going on in the building at Marion County. I really do. They're methodical. They're thorough. I know personally several people that work there because that's my county, one of my counties. I know how they compartmentalize their work and the way they implement it. And every question I've asked, they've been very open with me and shared information and let me look over their shoulder when I had questions. So I really have a high degree of confidence that what's going on inside the building is in compliance with the law and is of high quality.
Good.
They had an issue over the weekend, which was really unfortunate, and I spoke to them about it, where there was not very good communication. They did come in and do some ballot counting. And what they did is, since it was on the weekend, the county offices were closed and locked. We had an observer come over in the morning around 9 or so to go witness the count because he'd heard secondhand that the count was going on. The door was locked. He went to the back door. He called the office, and he could not get in. Well, what it turned out is they didn't show up until like 10 o'clock. And when they showed up, they posted a note on the door or side of the door saying, if you want to observe, call this number. And it was a different number. It was the cell phone, actually, of one of the elections officials. So I talked to them about that. I do believe it was due to lack of communication. It was nothing intentional on the county's part. In fact, they were upset that it happened.
Well, so certainly I can certainly understand why some people would think the worst in that situation, but it's good to hear that you think that it's all on the up and up and not something nefarious, because we've certainly seen that not just in Oregon, but in other states as well. All right, everyone stay with us. In a year when there was a legitimate red wave nationally, what exactly happened in Oregon? We're going to continue our discussion with Ed Deal from House District 17. Stay with us. We're dissecting the election this year, not just Oregon's, but nationally as well here, but especially Oregon. We're talking with Ed Deal. He's a businessman, entrepreneur, engineer, and is the state representative from House District 17, which is most of Marion County, east of Salem, and parts of Linn County as well. And so, Ed, we were talking during the break there. We're not quite ready to leave Tracy Kramer's race there. Did you have any other thoughts on that, especially some Republicans you say that just didn't show up?
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts on this. One is... that I have some real concerns about not necessarily what's going on in the building, but what's going on outside the building with voter registration and the data, and how can we verify U.S. citizenship of our voters. That's one big issue. The other one is, you know, Tracy is down by 123 votes. And I know that our voting system, we have issues with mail-in voting. It is, as we both said, it's ripe for fraud. It has serious flaws. But 1,199 Republicans in that district did not vote. Now, let's say half of those are deceased or shouldn't be off the voter rolls. That still leaves 600 voters, way more than enough to swing this election. So despite our election system not being perfect, we in Oregon, just like they did in Pennsylvania, because they don't have a perfect system either, we can overwhelm them with votes. We can in these swing districts. We know we can. And that's probably the most frustrating thing for me.
Are you, I know that you trust what's going on inside the building. Do you have thoughts about what's going on outside the building? Because we talked last week with Judicial Watch, Bob Popper, and he definitely said that mail-in ballots are ripe for fraud. It's one thing when you show up fraudulently at a polling place, that takes some real chutzpah to show up and pretend you haven't voted elsewhere. But it's very different for mail-in ballots because there's no risk at all, hardly. And so it's, you know, a lot of, and he has seen certainly with other cases and in other states where people have voted fraudulently through the mail. What about our voter rolls concerns you?
Well, one of the big things is non-U.S. citizens. Okay. We know for a fact that we, the DMV, accidentally registered some non-U.S. citizens to vote. Some of those voted, but they have only analyzed a tiny fraction of the voter database, the voter rolls. The vast majority of Oregonians have self-attested to U.S. citizenship, and that's all it takes. You get a form, you check a box that says you're a citizen. There is no check. There is no inspection of an ID, a passport, nothing. We are a self-attestation state. You check that box that says you're a citizen, and that's it. We know anecdotally, this is anecdotally, that non-citizens have been encouraged to register to vote. They've been told it doesn't matter if you're a citizen because nobody checks, which is the honest truth. Nobody checks. There is, how is the county, if I go to the county and say, hey, would you verify if this person is a U.S. citizen? They'll tell you they don't have a mechanism to check that. And so,
well, given that,
for me,
if that's the case, that there's no check, then what's to stop them from voting?
Well, there is nothing to stop them from voting. There is no check to stop them from voting.
I guess
if you go to the law enforcement today and you say, could you tell me where the non-U.S. citizens are residing? They don't keep track of that. They don't cooperate with immigrations and custom enforcement. They do not keep track of that information. The information doesn't exist with the Secretary of State. It doesn't exist with the county clerks. I'm just expressing some of my frustration that I have when I go through this data set and look at the voter rolls and go, there is no way for me to tell citizenship on these without going up and knocking on a door and saying, hey, are you a U.S. citizen?
Well, I guess theoretically somebody would not vote because there is the potential of a fine. But in a Democrat-run state, you know, we've certainly seen down in California where they don't, you know, it's also against the law to steal $1,000 worth of merchandise or more from stores. And yet we see that happening all the time down there. So if they're willing to steal, you know, face to face, right in front of a store owner, why would you not cast a vote illegally?
Why wouldn't you? Especially if you're being encouraged to. Some of these groups that go out and harvest ballots are extremely aggressive, especially in that district. And they're the ones I'm talking about that have, we know anecdotally, that they have gone out and encouraged non-U.S. citizens to vote, to register to vote.
Yeah.
So
And again, why encourage them to register unless they plan to unless they're hoping that they'll vote fraudulently? I mean, otherwise, there's no reason to put them on the voter rolls.
No, there's no reason unless they intend to come back and then have them vote.
Yeah. Well, clearly,
so, and there's also pressure tactics on how they should vote. It's not good. It raises a lot of flags.
Well, when the Democrat Party is handing them thousands of dollars, giving them free room and board and cash to spend, more so than we give either to our seniors or to our veterans, I think we know how they'll vote, and that's the sad truth of things.
Yeah.
As far as Oregon itself is concerned, you know, we lost all three statewide races. What could those statewide races have done differently, you think, or was there was just not really going to be any hope for those Republican candidates? And I, just so people are clear, I'm talking about Secretary of State, Attorney General, and the Treasurer.
Well, one thought I had is to sell Multnomah County to Washington for a dollar.
And if only.
I've had several takers, they would donate the dollar. Because the difference in, I think, two of those three races was entirely Multnomah County.
Hmm.
Multnomah County went overwhelmingly Democrat, and it's like they just voted party line. And it's so frustrating. You know, Will, all three of those candidates performed quite well in every place, but Multnomah and Washington County were the huge outliers.
Hmm.
So it's I'm going to go through those numbers, Mark, but for a statewide race, we have to have some kind of a breakthrough in Multnomah County and Washington County. And I personally believe that there's two things that we need there's a number of things we need to take out of this last election cycle, but a couple of them.
But before you go let's save that for the next one, next segment there, because that's where I was going to go with you anyway. Everyone stay with us. We'll talk about that up next with Ed Diehl. Welcome back. Talk about the elections today, and especially looking at Oregon's election. We're doing that with Ed Diehl. He is he's the representative from House District 17. That's over in east of Marion and Linn counties. And so, Ed, going out of that last break there, you said there's a number of takeaways that you thought that we need to be looking at here in Oregon. So looking at the Oregon race here in terms of what happened, is there anything you can look at and say that Oregon did right this election? That's long pause,
well,
I have to say.
There were a lot of things I thought we were doing right. I was much more optimistic about this cycle than the numbers show.
Hmm.
On the statewide races, we really had some excellent candidates. We did in a lot of these purple, swing districts. So I thought we did a fine job of selecting those candidates. I think in a few cases we got them online too late. You know, this is something we should be selecting. We should be identifying candidates for the next cycle right now.
Yes.
The other thing that we need to work on is really looking at what these red wave states were able to accomplish and how did they do it and learn from that. And a big one is actively and aggressively pursuing low propensity voters to get them to vote Republican. Almost everybody signed up to vote in Oregon. We don't have to register anybody, but look at those, that subset of voters that are not voting, go after the blue collar folks, the working folks that feel like they've been abandoned, rightly so, by the Democrats, and get their help and vote for us. I think that would be huge.
Well, I know that, because we had interviewed some people from Turning Point Action, that's the political arm of Turning Point USA, and they had an app for that. to identify low propensity voters. And it was real simple. I used it myself. You just log in and it tags where your location is, and then it will show you on a map who the low propensity voters are. The ones, and they're either Republican or NAV, and they've been identified as leaning Republican.
Yeah.
And so it's not like you're handing the Democrats this handy tool, just go get out the vote for Democrats. It was only identified low propensity voters who were likely to vote Republican, and then you can go walk over and knock on their door. So why the Oregon GOP did not use that tool that was freely available, I'm mystified. And I agree with you. I think getting boots on the ground, at, because I've been active in Oregon politics since 2009, and they have always had a terrible ground game. And for some reason, they just refuse to fix that. And I don't have an answer as to why they don't fix that.
I think that there are some apps that are used. It's a variety of different apps that are used depending on what campaign you're working with. They weren't necessarily targeting low propensity voters. That's the thing. They were targeting other groups. Try and get the NAVs in the middle to swing your way. And what I think we learned from this cycle is that vote may cost you 10 times more than going after the low propensity voters. Get 10 low propensity voters on your side, or get one swing voter on your side. Go after the low propensity voters. So it is a different tact. And the other thing, we had a lot of door knockers. I saw a lot of activity on that. I did it myself. I was out knocking doors for other candidates. We're just frankly outgunned by the other side.
When you say outgunned, you mean they have more people or
them.
Okay, more money. Okay.
They've got more people. They have more money. I believe some of their we had paid door knockers this go around, but they had way more. And they were just more effective. So there's a number of things we have to learn, but I believe, like you're saying, the key to our victory in Oregon is a better ground game. I believe we need to do a much better job, and I'm speaking as in the caucus, of engaging our base. And they're on fire because they saw what happened across the country. They rightly so want and expect it to happen in Oregon. I want that too.
Yeah.
And I want to work with them to make that happen.
Absolutely. So my question is, though, we've identified what needs to happen. We need a better ground game. We need a better means to get out the vote. We need to go after these low propensity voters. Knowing that and saying that is one thing. Doing that is a different matter. So how do you see that actually being enacted? Do you see that coming through the Oregon Republican Party or through candidates who themselves are going to be demanding better action on the ground? How do you see that unfolding?
Can you give me a few weeks to get back to you? Because I do have a plan. But
sure, we'd love to have you back on and talk about that.
But I really want to come back and talk about it, but I'm not quite ready for that yet.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk to you about this potential supermajority, because I think a lot of people are dreading this possibility. It's going to take a bit, so let's break a little bit early. Everyone stay with us. We will wrap things up with Ed Diehl after this. And welcome back in our final segment now with Ed Diehl. He's a representative from House District 17 in Marion and Linn Counties. His webpage is simply eddiehl.com. That's eddiehl.com. Diehl.com. And in case you missed that, it's up on iSpyRadio.com. This week's show page is 14-47. So, Ed, in the time that we have left, it's kind of scary, actually, looking at what's going on here in Oregon. We are, once again, jealous of the red wave that happened everywhere else other than here. And it's looking like we're going to be dealing with supermajorities in the Senate for sure, and likely in the House. So what's the plan? Can anything be done here?
It's going to be an ugly session. It's going to be a really ugly session. When we fall into the super minority, that means that they can pass taxes without any Republican vote.
Right.
And based on the way things have gone in the past, I know there was a time where there was what some people called the Mod Squad, a group of moderate Democrats that would block some of the extremist bills. But Kotek systematically unelected those people. And if there is a moderate left in that building on the Democrat side, they're not willing to stand up against the extremist sides of their party.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of them.
So I'm very concerned. I know that the lobby groups and the party, they're doubling down on sanctuary state status. They're going to double down on access to abortion from wherever. They're going to double down on the whole transgender issue and the sex trait modifications for kids. We're going to be seeing tax proposals. They're going to come after the kicker. It's going to be ugly. And without some people on the Democrat side being willing to step out and take a risk going against their own party, I don't see any way around it.
Hmm. Well, if we're raising taxes left, right, and center, and I assume that's going to mean like potential property tax increases as well, more spending on schools than ever before, even though we already had that, and somehow they're magically out of money, which doesn't make any sense to me. What's going to be the societal impact, especially in terms of businesses? Are we going to be seeing a wave of businesses leaving the state?
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. You know, we're already seeing manufacturing and construction jobs decline right now. While government jobs are growing, it's just not a healthy position for any state to be in. That's a real concern. I'm looking at the numbers. I can see the math. I know we can provide more balance in that building to prevent this from happening. But as Republicans, we got to get our act together. And we have to take a fresh look at how we've been going about this.
In terms of getting the act together, do you have anything in mind in terms of what that would look like?
Well, you know, in addition to the different approach on increasing our voter base, like we talked about, I believe, you know, too often Oregon Republicans are really scared to be labeled as Trump or MAGA, that kind of thing. And the truth is, we can't run away from it. Even if it was a good idea, we can't run away from it. We need to lean into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to embrace it, especially seeing what happened with the red wave that went across this country.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going with that when you said that.
Those policies are wildly popular. Embrace those policies. Make it clear who we stand for, what we stand for, and embrace it, because we can't run away from it. The other thing that we need to do is we need to make this the year that abortion is no longer a wedge issue in this state. And that's a tough one, but I think we need to face the fact that most people are not where I'm at. I'm ardently pro-life, but most people in this state are not, and it would be a mistake to pass legislation that was not widely accepted by Oregonians.
Well,
and so
I think
really,
some of that could be that you start where there is agreement. I don't think most people, even the far left Democrats, are okay with women having an abortion the day before birth. So let's maybe start chipping away at that, because people need to start realizing, you know, what the harsh realities of an abortion, that yes, some women do in fact have elective abortions right up until to the day of birth. That sort of thing you would think would be something that Democrats, even the further left ones, would be able to agree, you know, that's just a step too far. We should not be doing that. So
yeah,
I'm hoping that
I think it is.
You're never going to get rid of abortion entirely in one fell swoop. I think people just have to forget that. you've got to chip away at it. And you know, it's like carving a statue. You don't, it's all of a sudden there. You've got to chip away at it until you get to the desired end. In terms of, you know, we talked about taxes and all that. What about things like punitive green energy, net zero, carbon cap, and other imaginary but punitive regulations? Are we going to be slammed with those?
We are going to be slammed with those. I think they're going to try and replace some federal rules that might go away. They'll probably try and institute those at a state level. You know, one crazy thing that is going on right now is this clean diesel mandate, which is basically making certain diesel vehicles so we can't even purchase them in the state in 2025. It's ridiculous. The standards way exceed the manufacturer's ability to produce anything. So we're pushing back on that hard, but so far the Democrats are not willing to even consider that that needs to be done. And I've got businesses in my district that are looking like, I don't know if they'll have to close, but they'll come pretty close to it because they can't do business without access to new vehicles and new engines. So it's a real problem, but I do think they're going to be doubling down on environmental policy as well as everything else. They didn't take any lessons away from this other than, wow, we are the last hope for all the leftist ideas, and we better double down and reinforce what we've been doing.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Once again, yeah. Oregon is being relegated to the Wuhan lab of leftist policies. They're going to experiment on them here before they send them elsewhere. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock here. Ed, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to being back with you.
Absolutely. I look forward to having Ed back on sometime in the near future to start talking about what needs to be done here in Oregon. Unfortunately, the true corrections need to happen legislatively, and the Democrats won't want to fix something that could mean they would lose. And with the supermajority, the only tool that the Republicans have left is to walk out again, deny quorum. But remember, Democrats, whenever they gain power, they always overreach. People did not vote for Kamala because they hated Joe Biden's overreach. There is hope in Oregon, but as I said at the beginning of this show, it's going to take a lot of hard work to get there. If you'd like to listen to that speech that I mentioned, I put a link to it on this week's show page, which is 14-47 on iSpyRadio.com. But as evidence of hope, let's remember that Michigan, a deep blue state in which there was plenty of cheating in 2020 and 2022, Republicans retook their house. Don't give up, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.